Good morning, and welcome to Local Matters Health Matters, where we spotlight key health issues and community concerns across the Upper Cumberland. I'm Dr. Emily Lee.
And I'm Dr. Jennifer Mabry.
We're professors at the Whitson Hester School of Nursing at Tennessee Tech University. This May, we're recognizing National Melanoma and Skin Cancer Detection and Prevention Month, a time to raise awareness about the importance of early detection, sun safety, and regular skin checks. As we head into the warmer months, it's a crucial reminder to protect our skin and stay informed about the risk of melanoma and other forms of skin cancer. Joining us today is Amber Hoffert, a local physician assistant from Highlands Dermatology and Surgical Associates here in Cookeville. She's here to share insights on how we can prevent skin cancer, what signs to look for, and why regular dermatological care is so important, especially in communities like ours. Amber, thank you so much for being here.
I'm honored to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right, let's start off a little bit about your background. Can you start by telling us a little bit about yourself and about your role as a PA in dermatology?
Yes, well, I am proud to be a Cookeville native and local. Raised here my whole life. My family's from here and went to undergraduate at Tennessee Tech.
Yay, go Eagles.
Wings up.
So after finishing that, had some good advisors when I decided where I wanted to go for graduate school, what I wanted to do, and I chose to go the route of a physician assistant, which is to get a master's degree in medicine. So went to Trevecca University for that, got my master's, and then actually went to work at Cookeville Regional for about 8 years in the emergency room.
Okay.
So I remember you there.
Yes. Uh-huh. So 8 years of emergency medicine, you get to learn a lot about all specialties of medicine. Mm-hmm. And so at the end towards that, at the end of that era, I had done a lot of sewing at that point. Lots of suturing, lots of traumas. So when this opportunity for surgical dermatology came around, it was kind of a nice little fit. And it was a good timing in the life of my family. And so I made that transition into surgical dermatology, and I've been working at Highlands Dermatology for 11 years.
All right.
So as a PA in the office, we are really a team. The epitome of what you would expect a team between a physician and an extender to look like. I think it would be safe to say that most patients who come in would feel comfortable saying that the same things they hear from Dr. Scott Hall, who is our Mohs surgeon, would be very similar to what they would hear from me. Because we practice the same way and we really work together for what's the benefit and the best thing for our patients. So Dr. Hall has been a Mohs surgeon for 39 years.
What is Mohs for our listeners?
Great question. Yeah. It is Mohs micrographic surgery, and it is a specialized technique to be able to remove skin cancers, especially from the neck up and those areas that you don't have a lot of skin to lose, where you can remove all of the cancer before you close it. And so there's a lot of reassurance of knowing that I have a skin cancer that's scary enough. And then when I go into surgery, have this done, I can walk out and know that I've got 99.9% of that cancer removed already without having to wait for further pathology because the pathology is done in-house.
Yeah.
So it's somewhat specialized. Skin is one organ, the biggest organ.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
But one organ, and within that field, there are a lot of subspecialties in dermatology. Mm-hmm. Some dermatology practices focus on cosmetics. Mm-hmm. Some focus on funky rashes. Mm-hmm. Some focus on autoimmune diseases. Mm-hmm. And our niche for our practice is really medical dermatology and surgical dermatology for skin cancers. And I would say that's the vast majority of what we do, with some other things thrown in, but that's the majority of it. And working with Dr. Hall has been an honor for these last 11 years because he's such a wealth of experience and knowledge. And in all of these years, he still focuses our entire practice on let's do what's right and what's best for our patients as a group.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we're lucky to have both of you here in the
Thanks.
Upper Cumberland.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit more about your clinic, the practice, hours, those kind of things. What types of skin conditions do you typically see besides skin cancer? I know that's a big part of what you do.
Sure. So at Highlands Dermatology, there are a few of us providers. I work with some fantastic nurse practitioners also. And in the clinic, you would come in and see one of us to have an exam or for whatever your problem is, if you just want to look at your moles, to look at your spots, or you have a rash, or maybe you've been told that you have another skin disease like psoriasis or acne or rosacea. then we're the ones who can help you with those. And then looking for constantly, no matter what you're there for, I'm always looking for something that's not quite right. Mm-hmm. And looking for the abnormality that could end up being a skin cancer, and especially in this area, which I know we're going to talk about more why that's important here, but there's a lot of genetics in our area with a lot of chronic sun use that creates a bad recipe for some skin cancers. So, yeah, my typical day is I may start the day with some excisions for skin cancers and then do the majority of my day looking at patients and addressing concerns and then really screening you for things that you don't even know are a concern.
Right. Okay. We're talking about healthy skin and skin cancer detection and prevention with local physician assistant Amber Hoffert. So what do you think are some of the most rewarding aspects of working in dermatology?
Hands down, my patients. I love my patients. Like, I really enjoy the privilege of still getting to go to work.
Yeah.
And taking care of people. And I enjoy the fact that this is a type of practice where I want to see them again.
Yep.
Not that I want something bad to be there, but I enjoy that continuity of care that you get to establish. And you know, and as we all grow up, we've had a lot more sun damage because we've had more trips around the sun.
Yeah.
So there's a good amount of my patients who might consider themselves geriatric. Mm-hmm. I have a patient as old as 109 years old, and I have so much fun getting to take care of them, and also taking care of younger patients as well. There, it's just it's a great cross generations that you get to enjoy. You get to enjoy hanging out with them. But yes,
so you see the entire lifespan.
Yeah.
They become like family members,
absolutely,
right? Because you
yeah.
develop relationships with these
absolutely.
People.
Absolutely.
How young do you see patients typically?
You know, our youngest patients are typically early teenagers most of the time with, you know, there's a few exceptions. But when it comes to pediatric dermatology, there are some great subspecialists in Nashville that we often refer some of those specific age-related problems to.
Yeah.
But, yeah, once you have some acne problems that start up, that's usually about the time. So there's not a defined age because that's different in every patient, but usually that's about the time period.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to change topics.
Yeah.
Thank you for telling us about your practice and about what you and Dr. Hall do. You talked about recipe for skin changes and skin damage. So I think that's what we'll get into. I'd like to get into that a little bit more. So since it's National Melanoma and Skin Cancer Detection and Prevention Month in May, can you explain why this month is so important? Why May? And why? What's the recipe for skin damage?
You know, I guess they probably picked May because the sun really starts coming out. And mm-hmm. we really start thinking about those trips, those vacations, working outside in our yards. And we spend a lot more time outside, especially in this area of the country. And so then we start thinking about, wow, you know, it didn't take long, and here I am. I already got a tan. And we all have what I like to call sins of our past, meaning years ago, decades ago, we didn't exactly know how damaging the sun could be on our skin.
Right.
There was just a lot that we hadn't learned yet and weren't well educated on. And then as time has gone and research has proven how damaging the sun or UV damage is, mm-hmm. whether that's naturally from the sun or it's from a tanning bed,
mm-hmm.
it is an equal amount of damage when it comes to the skin, to the dermis. And so what's unique about this area is the genetics. So we can't deny what family we're born into in our DNA.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so if you happen to get genetics that aren't meant to be in the sun all the time, a lot of fair-complected folks, a lot of light eyes, light mm-hmm. hair type, genetically speaking, you're not really meant to have a lot of sun exposure.
Exactly.
And then you live your entire life in the South, and we have beautiful parks, and we have beautiful lakes, and we have all of this great outdoor work, you know, experiences that we should enjoy because life is short and you should enjoy them. But then to work outside either in farming or to play outside all the time and not consider what damage is being done to your skin over all of those years, it catches up with you.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, we have to pay the price for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I see a lot of folks who have spent their life as farmers, or they've spent their life working outside in construction, or just spent their life playing outside and not taking it seriously when they were young because those consequences didn't happen initially.
Yeah.
And then later on, the damage starts to come out.
Yeah.
I can understand that. So, and, you know, I think back to my dad's generation, too. as well as Dr. Lee's. And, you know, our parents did farm, and there wasn't sunscreen. And you wore a big hat and maybe a long shirt, but you were doing that because you didn't want to get hay on you. It wasn't because of the sun. So I can see that even that generation, and why you would see those older people in your practice having more problems with the sun exposure.
I mean, you know, years, generations ago, everyone, your mama would send you outside to play because you need a little color on you, and it made you look healthier. If you weren't too fair, you looked unhealthy. And little did we know that that perhaps was actually going to cause some more damage than help.
So for our listeners, I'm going to go back to one thing you said, tanning beds.
Yes.
So you talked about UV rays from the sun. Are there different kind of UV rays? And then, you know, a myth that I hear a lot of patients say is, well, I go to a tanning bed where I'm only in there for 5 or 10 minutes, and therefore my skin damage is limited. Is that true, or is that a myth?
That's actually a great myth to bust.
Okay, let's do it.
So there is there are different types of UV rays that are both damaging. UVA and UVB can both contribute to skin cancers and to photoaging, where we think of the things that we don't like sunspots and wrinkling and so forth. And whether you're getting that naturally in the sun or you're getting it in a tanning bed, it's the same damage.
Okay.
And so the whole idea of, I'm just going to lay for a little bit and get this quote-unquote base tan so that I won't burn later and get cancer later. Any amount of sun damage, UV damage, that's going to give you enough to give you a tan is still going to be enough to damage the DNA of your skin and cause damage later on.
We've had Amber Hoffert, Physician's Assistant from Highlands Dermatology and Surgical Associates, discussing healthy skin and skin cancer detection and prevention in the Upper Cumberland. Amber Hoffert, Physician's Assistant, is our guest today on Local Matters, Health Matters. We are talking National Melanoma and Skin Cancer Detection and Prevention Month. I'm Dr. Jennifer Mabry.
And I'm Dr. Emily Lee.
Nursing professors from Tennessee Tech University. All right, Amber. Our last segment, we were discussing about the month of May being National Melanoma and Skin Cancer Detection and Prevention Month. So how often do you tell your clients and people in the Upper Cumberland, how often should they get their skin checked?
It's a great question. So I think it really is individualized, much like all of medicine. Mm-hmm. There's not cookie-cutter answers for all of us.
Okay.
So if you have no real family history of skin cancers, no personal history, you've been a pretty responsible sun user through your life, and then a once-a-year screening just for the things that you can't see is completely reasonable. For someone who has more of a family history, like mom, dad, brothers, sisters, grandma, grandpa had several skin cancers, or you've had some areas yourself, then definitely once a year. So I say the first one is a good idea for everyone because you never know what you don't know as a baseline. But for those who have more risk factors, and it gets back to that, you can't beat your DNA and your genetics of what you come from. It's really more of a necessity at that point because I feel like that early detection is the entire key.
What does this involve? When you say, you know, a cancer screen yearly, what does that involve for the listeners?
Yeah, it sometimes people imagine that you're going to come into some device that's going to beep around you like the Jetsons or something, and that's not it. You're going to come in, and we're going to give you a gown, and we're going to basically have to get down to the skin so that we can see what you've got. And especially
so you mean unclothed?
Unclothed to the skin.
Yeah, okay.
And then let's take a look at it and see what you've got, especially in the areas who've had more sun exposure. So for most of us, that's going to be on your face, on your neck, on your ears, on your arms, on your chest, on your back. But especially for gentlemen, that tends to be where they get more of their sun exposure, with gentlemen taking their shirts off and working outside and so forth. And then there is this full skin exam where we look at everything on the skin because there are certain types of skin cancers that can happen even where the sun has not shined.
Yes.
That can be in between your toes, on the bottom of your feet, on the areas that you think, well, no UV has ever hit this area of my body, but they can still be some skin, there can still be some damage there that that can be surprising.
Yeah.
Any tips for doing self-checks then at home? I know you gave the areas, but is there specific tips?
Yeah, so self-checks are great. I'd say at least once a month, looking over yourself. Mm. And, you know, we all have spots. We all have moles. We all have things. And that doesn't mean that you have bad skin, because a lot of that is also genetic on how many you have. But it's important to know your spots. I like to call your moles your friends.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So think of your friends. You know them. You know what they look like. Mm-hmm. You know what they feel like. And then if you have a friend that's changing, that's something that you need to get looked at. Much like if we have a friend in real life and they're acting different, you need to say, hey, what's going on? So your moles are your friends, and if you have one that's changing, it definitely needs evaluation.
Okay.
But knowing what they look like, you can compare them to something that's standardized. For example, if I have a spot on my arm and it's been there for a long time, I can take a picture of it with my phone next to a dime. A dime's shape and size never changes. So if I compare it to that picture all the time and, again, take the same picture another 6 months or a year later with the same dime and I see a change in the lesion, I know that lesion has objectively changed. I need to get looked at.
Okay. That's great advice. Using an object in your home to take the picture with to gauge size and to give you some kind of reference.
Yeah.
Very good advice.
It's an easy time with technology being our friend with our phones and storage, and we can go back and capture things and recheck them. And that's a good way to say, yeah, I think it's not just in my head. There really is some change with the spot. It needs to be looked at.
Are there any kind of special events that you know of or awareness events happening in our community this month? I mean, since it's May, I mean, we're doing this segment today, which is getting out to the community and our listeners. But
absolutely. Awareness of how to protect yourself, what to screen for. I know some communities do have a screening event with like a health screening that they, if they see a lesion that looks concerning, then they may want to kind of put you off towards dermatology.
We're referring to you guys.
And then I think it's just a good time that we all just stop and think about it, because you just don't think about the things you don't know.
Right.
And so once you're aware that this is something that I really should pay more attention to.
I mean, October, I think of breast cancer because they go pink, and it's October. So absolutely, we should think of May as let's look at our skin before we go out and expose it.
Exactly.
Especially as summer's coming around.
Yep.
May, first day of summer. I did want to go back. We've talked a lot about melanoma, and we've just said skin cancer. So can you tell listeners most common types?
Yes, and that's actually a great question. A lot of times in our mind, we hear skin cancer, and everyone equates that to melanoma. Like all skin cancers are melanoma, and that's not correct. The most common skin cancer, in fact, the most common cancer of all cancers on the body, is a basal cell carcinoma of the skin. And those are different from melanomas. They are not what you might imagine as a dark spot that looks unruly, which we can talk about some of these features. It can be really kind of slowly changing and mildly suspicious because they're sneakier.
Yeah.
But in general, wounds that don't heal after a couple months or a spot that bleeds easily, those can be signs of a basal cell carcinoma. And those are, again, slow-growing skin cancers. It may take a while before it becomes lethal, but it can cause a lot of destruction before it gets to that point. So catching them before they get to that point is the important thing in removing them. And they have this great rate of successful removal with Mohs, with excisions, and other methods of destruction that you can really stop that damage completely if it's just found.
Okay. So basal cell is your most common type?
Most common, yes. Okay. Second would be a squamous cell carcinoma of the skin. That would be one to talk about. And actually, squamous cell carcinomas of the skin kill more Americans than melanomas. We don't hear about it as much. I think melanomas are a little bit scarier because they sometimes are asymptomatic. We don't feel them or know that they're there. And squamous cells usually will get your attention. They will hurt. They grow quickly. And you're like, this is a sore that's just really getting out of control kind of in a few weeks period. And so that would be one that's it grabs your attention. And you would have to really be intentional about ignoring it usually.
Okay, so if we find it, listeners find that, and they call over and can't get in with you.
Right, yeah. So we have such a great amount of family providers in this area, of our primary care providers. And they are really good about knowing that, wow, this is a spot that needs a biopsy. This needs to be taken care of. And so if you can get into your PCP, and even if they aren't comfortable doing the biopsy, they can pick up the phone and call us.
Yep.
And be like, absolutely, I think this is something that's worrisome, and then we're going to do what we can to make it happen and get that biopsy done quickly.
Good, good. That's good to know. Mm-hmm. So we're talking national melanoma and skin cancer detection and prevention with local physician assistant Amber Hoffert from Highlands Dermatology and Surgical Associates. So switching gears just a little bit, we're going to talk about skin cancer information or misinformation. There's a lot of information out there online and or on social media about skin cancer. So a common myth or misconception that you would like to clear up?
Let me get a base tan.
Mm.
And
yeah.
I think that one is a good one. Yes, having significant burns, especially in early life and childhood, can increase your risk of melanoma later on. Mm-hmm. But giving yourself the – and it's honestly, it's an excuse. It's an excuse to do what we want.
I think so.
To have that base tan that's going to protect me from it later on. No, it's not. We're kind of lying to ourselves on that one. I think that's the biggest misconception that I'd like to put out there. And the other one is that if I have sunscreen on, I'm not going to tan. That's also a myth. You're still going to get some sun.
Absolutely.
And you're still going to have some color, but hopefully prevent those skin cancers.
Well, thank you for clearing those myths up. More on important skin cancer information with Amber Hoffert. Our guest today is Amber Hoffert from Highlands Dermatology and Surgical Associates on Local Matters, Health Matters. So, Amber, we were talking a little bit in our last session about information or misinformation about skin cancer, and you kind of busted the myth about, you know, needing a base tan. So some people also believe that having darker skin means that they don't need sunscreen. So can you speak to that just a little bit?
Sure. So there is some validity in that if you are, have a ethnicity that has darker skin tone, that you're not as likely to get some types of skin cancers. Yes, but melanomas, as we're talking about melanoma, mm-hmm. may, can come up on all skin types.
Okay.
And so that is one, you know, when you're talking about something that can metastasize and have a poor outcome, it can be on all skin types, whether you're very fair complected and have what we call a very light Fitzpatrick type of skin or darker, it's still a concern.
Okay, good.
So those people need to wear sunscreen.
Yeah, so sunscreen can definitely help. And not just sunscreen, but I would have to say physical barriers are really important
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm.
Your hat,
mm-hmm.
Wearing some long sleeves. They have so many great products now that have what they say the SPF is built into the shirt.
Right, right.
And then you can get them at Fishing Supplies and Academy.
Walmart.
And places like this. Walmart, yeah.
Yeah.
And they're wonderful. A lot of them are a wicking of moisture,
mm-hmm.
and they kind of keep you cooler.
Yeah. So do they really have SPF in them?
It's all about the weave of the fabric
mm-hmm.
and how it blocks the sun.
Okay.
But they're fantastic. Rash guards, if
you've
heard of a rash
mm-hmm.
guard
oh,
for
yeah.
swimming.
Yeah.
I love a rash guard on because then it's kind of like having a constant SPF of 50 on in the area that that's covering, and then you can focus your sunscreen on the other areas that are exposed. So I'm a big fan of a rash guard in the pool, in the lake, in the water.
And if you've got several kids that you're sunscreening, it's less area to sunscreen.
Absolutely. And it keeps you cooler. If you're in the water and you're wearing those long sleeve rash guards, the water is in the fabric too.
True.
And it cools you down more. Whereas if your skin is bare and the sun comes down and evaporates off, your skin gets hot. You get that hot feeling before it burns.
Yeah.
And it actually cools you down, which is what most people's complaint is, I can't wear long sleeves in the sun. It burns me up. Whereas it actually can be more cooling.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Those fishing shirts do that.
They're amazing.
I can vouch for that.
Yep. Yeah.
Anyway, so we talked about tanning. We talked about tanning beds. Talked about the myth about a base tan. So another topic that a lot of patients come in and ask us about is spray tans,
mm-hmm.
self-tanners.
Mm-hmm.
How safe are those?
You know, I've not read any studies that say that the chemicals that are used in self-tanners or spray tans are carcinogenic or cause cancer.
Okay.
Whereas the sun and the tanning beds have multiple studies that show that they cause skin cancers.
Okay.
So although, you know, in medicine we like to change our minds a lot about things as we learn more research,
mm-hmm.
I have seen no evidence to this point that they cause any kind of harm to the skin.
Okay.
And definitely no damage to the DNA of the skin. So I'm a big supporter. Now, truthfully, I'm a supporter of just loving what you're in. Yeah. And loving the skin that God gave you.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's the way he made you, and we can learn to embrace that. But if it makes you feel more confident to have a self-tanner or a spray tan on, then go for it.
Maybe safer than the base tan.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
There you go.
So what about parents protecting their kids? Because, you know, I know when my boys were small, wrangling them to put sunscreen on before the spray sunscreen mm-hmm. came out was terrible,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, reapplying, and it's just, so what advice do you have for parents and kids' skin, especially as we head into summer?
So this is a good one when it comes to sunscreen. It takes a lot of sunscreen to get the protection that's promised on that SPF.
Oh, I did not know this.
So for an adult, it takes about an ounce, which is what they would say is about a shot glass worth.
Okay.
Wow.
That's a lot of sunscreen. Mm-hmm. And if you're holding a wiggly child in between your legs trying to get as much on and slap them down as much as you can and get it to soak in, it's a hit or miss. There's a lot of human error that comes with that.
Yeah.
Because it has to be so many millimeters thick across the skin to match where the studies gave them that approval for that SPF rating. So with knowing that there's a little bit of human error there, that's why I'm still a huge fan of some physical barriers too, especially for kids in pools. When my kids were young, that's rash guards, that was it. I mean, it was
same.
Like, let's
same.
Put these rash guards on. And then because they look at us as parents, and they look at us and our example. So that was when my husband and I started wearing them.
Oh, yeah.
When we had kids. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know what? I'm not going to ask this of my child and then do something different.
Yeah.
Because they always start at home and what they look at is your example. So that's really when we really started being believers in them and wearing them ourselves as well. And then, yes, so sunscreen, it does take a lot more than you think to get a good amount of coverage where you're going to get what is said on the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't last forever. So we sweat it off and we wipe it off and we talk it off and we eat and around your face and on your lips. So you have to reapply it for some of them about every 80 or 90 minutes,
okay.
at least.
So hour and a half.
Hour and a half to 2 hours.
Okay.
You're going to have to reapply. Yeah. And that's often where we fail the test. People will be like, you know what? I did the thing. I put my sunscreen on. Now we're going to go to the ballpark and we're going to watch baseball
for
game
6 hours.
All day
yeah.
long. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, I don't know how I got burnt. It was even cloudy.
I put sunscreen on.
Well, it just wasn't reapplied.
That's a good myth. So
yes.
if it's cloudy out, you can still get
Absolutely.
UV rays.
Absolutely.
Yep. Okay.
You can still get that damage. Umbrellas are helpful because it's a barrier there.
Physical, yeah.
But the clouds, that ultraviolet radiation still comes right through it.
Yep. So best sunscreen then.
Yes.
Let's talk about what do you suggest are the best sunscreens and SPF.
Yes.
Should be
you. I have seen and heard lots of super experts in conferences and debate this topic, and I think it's a fascinating one because the real answer is the best sunscreen is the one you love. Because
no.
if you don't love it, you're not going to put it on.
Yep.
We're human.
I believe it.
We are human.
I do not love
so
some.
I can tell you what my favorite one is,
mm-hmm.
but if you don't like it,
I can tell you what my favorite one is.
I know you're not going to use
mm-hmm.
it. So I have parameters more than like a specific brand
okay.
that I like to
Good.
Encourage.
Okay.
Because we are all different. We have different preferences. So I do like at least an SPF of 30,
mm-hmm. yes.
30 or more. And that is going to give you the better coverage. I like a mineral sunscreen for the face. And so a mineral sunscreen is one that includes the ingredients when you look on the back label of either zinc oxide or titanium dioxide. And historically, for those of us who lived through the 80s, they were those like really opaque ones that they would add color to and you would have like a pink nose and blue stripes, or at least you felt like you were a snowman in white.
Yep.
They have really changed a lot of those formulations and they're a lot better now. They're not this white out look anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They have learned to make those particles smaller and ultra micronize them so that they sit down in the skin more. And so you really don't have that white out look anymore. They can look a lot better. But the minerals are helpful for the face, especially because if you've ever sweat and you get sunscreen in your eyes, it's like game
Burns.
Over. It hurts so
mm-hmm.
bad. And so these don't burn the eyes as much. That's a really huge thing when you're working outside.
Or sports with children.
Absolutely.
Because that's what I used on my... Yeah.
Yeah, and then your kids are crying and they never
mm-hmm.
want to use it again. And
nope.
then you're fighting them even more
so
to get it
mineral.
Back on.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And the other thing is it's about how they work. The mineral ones reflect the sun versus chemical sunscreens that kind of absorb the rays. They work a little bit differently. Now, a lot of the chemical sunscreens are in the ones that are going to be in your sprays and your foams and those that are easier to apply. And I love them for the trunk, for the arms. They're easy to reapply that way. Especially when you can't reach your back well, but you can kind of spray it and get some more there. I think that's easier for that area. But truly for the best protection, I think mineral ones are better. At least an SPF of 30, you're going to reapply it every couple of hours. And then after that, it kind of gets into some of your preferences. If it's really greasy, you're probably not going to want to use it. If it's, you know,
thick.
If it's really thick and you feel like it's, you know, oh, I feel it on my skin, I don't like it. So you really have to try a few things to find the one that you love. And some, I have teenagers, they like the ones that smell good. Okay, great, let's get one that smells good. As long as you don't have a fragrance allergy to your skin and you get hypersensitive, then great. There's others that people say, everything makes me break out. I get a rash to everything. They have some that are just really simplified and they don't have any fragrance. They're usually mineral sunscreens. They'll often advertise them for babies, and it's because they remove all the extra additives and it gets down to the really sensitive skin. Those are great for this.
Yeah. And they have mineral sunscreens, too, that are tinted.
Absolutely. There's actually a good push for tinted sunscreens, especially in the summertime. You can use it instead of a foundation if you wear makeup. And there's even a little bit of evidence that perhaps they reflect even more because they're tinted. And so it really looks flesh toned. You don't, you know, you don't have any of that white look. You can put them on and they kind of match skin tones. And then you can replace it for ladies if you want to replace foundation with that in the summer. It's easy to do or year round, or put them underneath your makeup and then you can't see it as well. And I have some gentlemen who use it too just because they don't want to look white and it just looks flesh toned.
Yeah. They don't want to look like Casper.
Okay, yes. You said 30 SPF. Now, this is also another myth that I have patients ask me. There are products on the market that are 100 SPF. Is there a limit to, I mean, I understand about it takes the amount, and that's what they get approved for, you know, the amount of the product. But is 100 SPF better? Can you stay out in the sun longer than if I used a 30?
Great question. So the time frame is the same.
Okay.
It's still that, you know, hour and a half, 2 hours, you got to reapply it. So how do they get that number? So if we're talking about science here with our professors. So this is one of those bell curves that they do these studies for. And you see this bell curve and it's one of those that approaches to be 100 but never quite gets there. And you have this big curve. And so when they do those studies on sunscreens, there was a big statistical significant change between an SPF 15 to an SPF of 30 because that's where the curve is starting to turn more before it flattens out.
Okay.
And then as you go from 30 to 45 to 50 to 65 to 70 to 100, the curve is getting flatter. So there is some more protection, but it's not as big of a jump as it was where that curve was jumping up at the beginning.
Thank you again to Amber Hoffert, Physician's Assistant from Highlands Dermatology and Surgical Associates, for joining us today and sharing such important information about skin cancer prevention and early detection. Thanks for tuning in to Local Matters, Health Matters. Until next time, please take care of the skin you're in.